Secretary of State Rex Tillerson claimed to have written a letter to Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov raising the issue of violence in Chechnya, but the State Department has declined to release copies of the letter.
My friend spoke with somebody who said, look, I've got a newborn, I don't have time to speak right now, but just in case they're gay, I'm voting yes.
I don't want him on the show. Mm-hmm.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A crackdown on queers begins in Azerbaijan, a gay youth comments on the genocide in Chechnya, and Aussie activists door knock and phone bank for equality. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Frances O'Brien.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending September 23rd, 2017. Echoes of the Chechen genocide reverberated in Azerbaijan this week, with reports that more than 100 gay and transgender people have been arrested and tortured following raids in the capital of Baku. Detainees have been threatened or beaten until they provide authorities with the names and addresses of their friends. Some transgender detainees reportedly have had their heads shaven. According to Eurasianet.com, police officials claimed that the raids were a crackdown on prostitution and had nothing to do with detainees' sexual orientation. But a statement issued by Ayaz Efendiev, deputy chairman of the Minority Justice Party, seemed to contradict that claim. Defending these creatures who are sources of immorality, dangerous diseases, and who have been cursed by God, he said, Western circles are trying to destroy our national traditions under the name of human rights. Homosexuality has been legal in Azerbaijan since 2000, but LGBT people in the nation at the crossroads of southeastern Europe and southwest Asia still face routine and systematic oppression. The European Parliament formally condemned the intimidation and repression of sexual minorities in the country in 2015. The following year, the global queer rights group ILGA ranked Azerbaijan the worst place in Europe to live for LGBT people. Javid Nabiyev, president of the LGBT Azerbaijan Alliance, told Pink News that it's unclear what prompted the roundup or how many people have been affected. He said that defense lawyers say at least 100 people have been detained over the course of several days. Nabiyev said the raids have taken place in private homes, workplaces, and public spaces where gay people are known to congregate. We are using all tools and resources to inform all LGBT people to be careful, to not have new dates, and to stay in the shadows for a while, he said. Everybody has a fear that they might be arrested at any time.
Authorities in the East African nation of Tanzania have also been cracking down on LGBT people in recent months. Police raided an HIV/AIDS education workshop on September 16th, being held at a hotel on the semi-autonomous island of Zanzibar. Regional Police Commander Hassan Ali Nasri told state television that the 12 women and 8 men who were taken into custody are implicated in homosexuality. We arrested them and are busy interrogating them. The police cannot turn a blind eye to this practice. Tanzania banned private health centers from providing HIV/AIDS-related care in February because doing so promotes homosexual activities, according to the country's health minister. The government subsequently banned the use of lube because it encouraged men to have sex with each other, and promised that anyone advocating for LGBT rights would be arrested. Authorities have also warned that LGBT foreigners in the country would be deported. President John Magufuli has infamously blamed Westerners who brought us drugs and homosexual practices that even cows disapprove of. Homosexual activity is a crime in Tanzania, punishable by up to 30 years in prison. A travel alert issued by International SOS has advised LGBT travelers to maintain a low profile at all times in the country because they may be harassed or arrested because of their sexual orientation or non-conforming gender presentation.
A judge in Brazil challenged the country's reputation as one of the most queer-friendly countries in Latin America this week by overturning a 1999 ban on so-called conversion therapy that purports to make gay people straight. Judge Waldemar de Carvalho ruled in Brasilia that evangelical Christian plaintiff Rosângela Justino, whose psychology license was revoked last year for offering to cure a patient's homosexuality, has the right to practice the heavily debunked therapy. Justino once told a local newspaper that, "I feel directed by God to help people who are homosexual." But virtually every reputable professional mental health organization in the Western world has declared the practice useless at best and often psychologically damaging to the patient. Ivete Sangalo, one of Brazil's most popular singers, was among several entertainers to criticize the ruling, saying that the sick ones are those who believe in this grand absurdity. Rio de Janeiro councillor Rogério Giannini joined the chorus of condemnation, noting that there is no way to cure what is not a disease. Thousands of rainbow flag-waving demonstrators gathered in downtown Sao Paulo to protest the ruling on September 22nd, as songs like Lady Gaga's Born This Way energized chants of "It's not a disease." The Federal Council of Psychology lambasted the ruling and promised to appeal the decision. Activists are also thinking about taking the case to the Inter-American Court of Human Rights.
In better news for the global queer community and their friends, Serbia's out premier, Ana Brnabic, became the first leader of a Balkan nation to march in a queer pride parade when she joined several hundred LGBTQ people and their allies amid tight security in Belgrade on September 17th. Several previous marches have ended violently as right-wing extremists attacked participants and the police officers trying to protect them. Generally peaceful pride parades have been held since 2014, but riot police cordoned off the city center with metal fences this year to prevent any repeats of the violent past. Brnabic told reporters that the Serbian government will respect the rights of all the citizens. "We want to send a signal that diversity makes our society stronger," she added, "that together we can do more." Brnabic attended the Pride March last year when she was public administration minister in the previous government of now President Aleksandar Vučić, who had declined previous invitations to attend the festivities. The former ultranationalist, who now identifies as a pro-European Union reformer, chose Brnabic to succeed him as premier earlier this year after he was elected president. Critics accused him of pinkwashing in an effort to improve Serbia's chances of winning membership in the EU.
Meanwhile, the American Civil Liberties Union is suing the state of Michigan in federal court for allowing state-funded private adoption and fostering agencies to refuse applications from same-gender couples. The Michigan Department of Health and Human Services allows faith-based agencies to reject those couples based on religious belief. Republican Governor Rick Snyder signed the bill permitting that bias in 2015. The ACLU is charging that the law violates the Establishment Clause of the U.S. Constitution's First Amendment, which forbids the use of religious criteria in the provision of government services. It also says the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause is being violated because the law discriminates against same-gender couples. The ACLU characterizes the need for adoptive families across the U.S. as desperate and points to studies that show same-gender couples to be 4 times more likely to adopt and 6 times more likely to foster children. Faith-based organizations, the group says, are preventing children from having stable homes based on criteria that have nothing to do with their ability to care for a child. Alabama, North Dakota, South Dakota, Mississippi, Texas, and Virginia have similar laws that allow child placement agencies to reject prospective gay and lesbian parents based on religious belief.
And finally, Queer Women and Queer Storylines won big at the 69th Annual Emmy Awards on September 17th in Los Angeles. The Handmaid's Tale, the dark feminist drama that includes several lesbian characters, took home Emmys for Outstanding Drama Series, Outstanding Lead Actress Elizabeth Moss, and Outstanding Director Reed Morano. Saturday Night Live's powerhouse lesbian star Kate McKinnon won the trophy for supporting actress in a comedy series for the second year in a row. the sci-fi lesbian love story San Junipero from the series Black Mirror was awarded Outstanding TV Movie and Outstanding Writing for a Limited Series, Movie or Dramatic Special. But the lesbian star of the night had to be Lena Waithe. She shared the Emmy with Master of None star Aziz Ansari for Outstanding Writing for a Comedy Series for the Thanksgiving episode. She became the first African-American woman to win the award and was celebrated with a standing ovation. She gave an exuberant shout-out to her peeps at the end of her acceptance speech.
My LGBTQIA family, I see each and every one of you. The things that make us different, those are our superpowers. Every day when you walk out the door, put on your imaginary cape and go out there and conquer the world, because the world would not be as beautiful as it is if we weren't in it. And for everybody out there that showed us so much love for this episode, thank you for embracing a little Indian boy from South Carolina and a little queer black girl from the South Side of Chicago. We appreciate it more than you could ever know. Thank you, Academy, for this.
That's News Wrap for the week ending September 23rd, 2017. Produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Frances O'Brien.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
Working 9 to 5. About 98% were yes voters. They hadn't received their ballots yet, but they were extremely excited to send them in straight away with a big yes.
TV dumps on Trump and Aussies push for yes in the postal marriage plebiscite later in the program. But first...
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again. Because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping. And the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence.
A young queer commentator laments the meager global response to homophobic atrocities in the predominantly Muslim region of Russia.
This is Outcasting Overtime, a special feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program. Hi, I'm Dhruv, a youth participant in Outcasting's main studio in Westchester County, New York. On this edition, Outcaster Dante talks about the blatant human rights violations in Chechnya, the local autonomous region within Russia. Gay and bisexual men are being outed and turned in by their own families, rounded up and forced into camps, and even executed. This situation highlights the extreme prejudice and homophobia that still exists in much of the developed world.
In the spring of 2017, authorities in Chechnya began rounding up gay and bisexual men. Since then, these men have been beaten, starved, tortured, and in some cases thrown off buildings and killed. There are also reports that the authorities are encouraging family members to report and turn in their gay relatives. In Chechnya and in much of Russia, homophobia is so extreme that the existence of gay people is denied. One authority responded to the allegations, saying, "You cannot arrest or repress people who just do not exist." Chechnya is a Russian-speaking federal republic which identifies itself as a constituent entity of Russia. It is located on the Russian border with Georgia. Around 1 million people are reported to live in Chechnya. The republic is led by Ramzan Kadyrov, a former rebel directly appointed to the Chechen presidency by Russian President Vladimir Putin. Neither Putin nor Kadyrov acknowledges the atrocities being committed. Russian officials deny the existence of a problem, but the U.S. House of Representatives passed a resolution on June 27th condemning the activity going on in Chechnya. Alan Lowenthal, a Democratic representative from California, stated, "We, as a nation, must lead the world in acting. It is our duty and responsibility to follow through on the consensus of the House and bring as much domestic and international political pressure as possible on the Russian government to rein in these deplorable human rights violations." On September 1st, The Washington Post reported that Secretary of State Rex Tillerson claimed to have written a letter to Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov raising the issue of violence in Chechnya targeting gay men and lesbians. But the State Department has declined to release copies of the letter. And on September 3rd, the New York Times reported that Canada has been working with a Toronto-based nonprofit organization called the Rainbow Railroad to quietly give refuge to queer men and women fleeing Chechnya. As of September, 22 gay men and lesbians from Chechnya have found sanctuary in Canada through the program. In Chechnya, the Russian LGBT network is doing what it can to protect gay and bisexual men. The most it can do at the moment is relocate these men, first to other less dangerous parts of Russia, and eventually out of the country if possible. It's essential for these men to be able to leave Chechnya because their relatives may be hunting them down. In Chechnya, homosexuality carries a stigma for the entire family, and many people react violently against their own relatives. Despite the Russian LGBT network's best efforts, the violence will continue without intervention from the Kremlin. Russia itself has oppressive laws and lacks freedom of speech and the press, so this intervention is unlikely. You don't have to be LGBTQ to recognize what an atrocity this is. What gay and bisexual men living in Chechnya are going through is terrible, and I feel powerless to do anything. In 2016, the Pulse shooting reminded me that, even in this country, LGBT spaces are not above attack. I will never understand what it feels like to be threatened in a place you should feel the most safe, the most able to be yourself. In Chechnya, that threat is everywhere. It is in your government, your neighbors, your family and friends. The election of Donald Trump to the presidency and Republican majorities in both houses of Congress have begun to erode the rights of LGBTQ citizens here at home, but to see a country that actively attacks LGBT people with a government that encourages family members to kill their gay relatives is truly horrifying.
Thanks for listening to Outcasting Overtime, a special feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program. Outcasting is heard online at outcastingmedia.org, on iTunes, and on more than 50 public radio stations around the country. Outcasting Overtime is a production of Media for the Public Good, a nonprofit organization. Visit us at outcastingmedia.org to get information about Outcasting, watch Outcasting videos, access our social media links, and listen to the show. Thanks, and thanks for listening.
I'm Ellen DeGeneres, and you're listening to This Way Out. That was without cue cards, people.
Hello, hello. I like your smile. Hello. Shall we talk a while? Would you like some of my tangerine? I know I'd never treat you mean.
Most eligible voters in Australia have now received their ballots in the government's non-binding marriage equality plebiscite. Even though public opinion polls consistently show overwhelming support for opening civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples, equality advocates worry that many backers won't bother to participate in the non-compulsory vote. This Way Out correspondent Barry McKay reports from Balmain Town Hall in Sydney.
High above the Sydney skyline, a signwriter churned out its stark message, "Vote No." Leader of the Get Up Marriage Equality campaign, Sally Rugg, said in response that the Yes campaign did not need to pay for their advertising as rainbows were free. As you can see, spirits in the Yes campaign here in Australia are high, and I went along to a campaign meeting in the Sydney suburb of Balmain, where the first Australian gay rights movement formed in February 1971. This is an area known to have a high percentage of Yes voters, and I asked Jamie Parker, Greens Party State MP for the seat of Balmain, why bother to campaign in areas where there will be such strong support?
Because we know the purpose of the Marriage Equality Postal Survey was to ensure that it wasn't successful. We know that a lot of people will be supporting the Yes campaign, but actually will not fill in the ballot and return it. So we're there to tell people filling in the ballot and returning it is critical.
Madeline Lush is one of the local Yes campaign directors and recently went out door knocking in the nearby suburb of Annandale.
The Australian Marriage Equality Group and a bunch of other like non-partisan groups got together and we did the whole of Annandale and we went off in groups of two or three to go to, like, door knocking. Honestly, I would say about 98% of people we spoke to were yes voters and they hadn't received their ballots yet, but they were extremely excited to receive them and send them in straight away with a big yes. So it was really positive. It was great.
Why did you go to an area where you know there was going to be a very big yes vote?
We're going to areas where people are most likely to say yes but need an extra push to get their ballots in.
Alex Greenwich is well known as one of the Yes campaign directors and was recently in the city of Adelaide door knocking as well.
A really positive experience in Adelaide with many people indicating that they will vote yes and talking to us about who they will be voting for, their friends, their family members and their colleagues.
What did you do if you encountered someone who said no?
Well, during the door knocking in the part of Adelaide I was at, I actually didn't encounter any no voters. Everyone was really keen to vote yes and have us move forward.
Many of the attendees at the meeting were not necessarily members of the LGBTIQ community.
So you don't identify as LGBT yourself?
No, I'm a straight and parent. Okay. And married.
What motivates you? You're here with your daughter who's
yes.
in year 9.
Yes.
You're about 16 years old?
I'm 14.
14
actually.
Years old?
Yeah.
Okay. What has motivated you both to come here tonight to find out more about how to campaign for marriage equality?
I would like to see this yes vote go through. And the biggest risk is, to my way of thinking, is people not actually voting. And so I wanted to come along and see, and I didn't realise it was as dire as what they're thinking about people not voting, but that's the biggest risk. And I want to see what's happening to try and counter that issue.
Talking to your friends at school, is there a high amount of support for marriage equality?
A lot of my friends support marriage equality and I do have gay friends and most of us are very much positive for this movement.
But you don't get a vote, do you?
No, we don't get a vote. We're all 14 and younger and a bit older. Yeah, but I think it's still important for young people to be here and learning about this because it is our future and what our friends and family are going through for the next few decades. So it's important still.
Another strategy that the Yes campaign is using is called phone banking. Jamie Parker.
Phone banking is getting communities and individuals together to call numbers to encourage people to fill in their ballot and return it. That's what we're doing across the country, and with that we'll be able to ensure a yes vote.
I spoke to two men at the meeting who were recently involved with phone banking themselves.
The two of us attended the phone banking in Pitt Street at the Marriage Equality offices. Went for an hour, we sat on the phones, we used our mobiles, it was a 25-cent local call. And it was the wonderful yes response we got from random people we were speaking to. My friend spoke with somebody who said, look, I've got a newborn, I don't have time to speak right now, but just in case they're gay, I'm voting yes, and then hung up. So it's just been an overwhelming response of yes from all sorts of people. We don't know where we're calling, who we're calling. It was any age, any ethnicity, any background, and it was wonderful. Yeah.
What did you do if you got a no response?
We didn't get a no response.
I have a house in Canberra and a house in Sydney. Every Friday I spend 3 to 4 hours driving to Canberra, and I spend 3 to 4 hours driving back every Sunday night or Monday morning. I've made hundreds of calls. Not one single person has said no.
And these were all random calls?
Completely random.
Completely random calls. No one has said no.
You didn't get any nasty responses?
Not a single one.
That's excellent.
Zero.
The same two guys held a yes vote barbecue at their workplace recently.
We're auto body repairers, smash repairers, collision repairers, and we basically put on a yes barbecue where everyone can bring their vote in, and then we'll mail them for them. And we've got a very multicultural, multi-faith workforce. Out of everyone, out of all over 50 people that worked for the company, there was one person who chose to abstain from voting. If you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. You don't have to send the vote back in. You don't have to say no, even if you don't want to say yes.
Back to traditional door knocking, what approach was used? Madeline Lush.
We were given a very well thought out script by Australian Marriage Equality. I mean, they're very professional in knowing how to talk to people. So we had a brief training beforehand that was very well distributed, and then we just went with that. But just being friendly and talking to people and remembering that everyone's human, so.
What do you think is going to be the outcome in November?
Yes, a big yes.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot,
Thank
Madeline.
You. No worries. Thank you.
I'm Barry Mackay in Balmain in Sydney for This Way Out.
According to the latest opinion polls, negative campaigning by the It's Okay to Say No forces have successfully started to erode voter support for equality, and there are increasing reports of ballot tampering and outright fraud. While most young Aussie voters are expected to favor marriage equality, their challenge might be to find or even recognize a postbox. Some told the UK's Times newspaper that they've never mailed a postal letter in their lives. But the report quotes 19-year-old Sydney University student Emily Bocker. "My dad will know," she said. Check out www.yes.org.au. And finally this week,
poor little rich boy ain't got nothing but lots and lots of money. Poor little rich boy don't take nothing but some sad poor boy's money. Rides around all day with fancy clothes in a big long limousine. Poor little rich boy ain't got nothing but everything.
Pity U.S. President Donald Trump. He just can't catch a break. In the first of two examples, TV's Ellen DeGeneres tells guest Megyn Kelly, who said she'd welcome him on her new talk show, why she wouldn't. And earlier in the week at the 69th Annual Emmy Awards, out Lily Tomlin and ally Jane Fonda reunited with queer-supportive silent partner Dolly Parton to score what was probably the sharpest Trump thumping of the night.
You know, he has his Twitter account and he has ways to get his message across. There's nothing I'm going to say to him that's going to change him. And I don't want to give him a platform because it's just, it validates him. Mm-hmm. And I can't have someone that I feel is not only dangerous for the country and for me personally as a gay woman, but as to the world. He's dividing all of us. And I think I don't want to I don't want him on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 1980, in that movie, we refused to be controlled by a sexist, egotistical, lying, hypocritical bigot. Really? And in 2017, we still refuse to be controlled by a sexist, egotistical, lying, hypocritical bigot.
Poor little rich boy ain't got nothing but everything.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. This week's program material came from Christopher Gall and Francis O'Brien, produced by Steve Pride, and from Outcasters Drew and Dante, produced by Mark Sulfis. Simon and Garfunkel, Sopwith Camel, and George Jones performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This layout thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our listener donors, for making this program possible. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WMBR Cambridge, Massachusetts, KGIG Modesto, California, CJMP Powell River, British Columbia, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.